This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, you know, my dad always told me that if something is very important, regardless of the circumstances, that you can always find the means, you can always find a way, and you can always find the time to make it happen. And I truly believe that. And today's guest is a true testament to that. Not only did this amazing individual overcome incredible obstacles along his journey to be where he is today, he also found the way and the time, despite being in New York City, the early U.S. epicenter of the pandemic, to become a Toastmaster. Ryan, who are we speaking to today?
Our guest today is Dr. Shlomo Noskow. Dr. Noskow is an emergency room physician in Brooklyn, New York, and he is also a member of Long Island University Brooklyn Toastmasters. Dr. Noskow was recently featured in the cover story of the June 2021 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. The title of the article is Paging All Healthcare Practitioners: How Toastmasters' Communication Skills Help a Variety of Medical Professionals. Dr. Noskow, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you, Ryan and Greg. I'm honored that you chose me for an interview. I've actually never been interviewed on a podcast, so I'm really grateful for the opportunity.
We're super excited that you're here.
We're excited to be your first.
Thank you.
Shlomo, as excited as we are to get into your amazing story and the obstacles that you overcame, finding your way to Toastmasters and all of that, I think to give our listeners some context into your background, it would be really great if you could give us just a thumbnail sketch of your educational backstory, if you will.
So like you said, I live in Brooklyn, New York. I was born and raised here and lived here most of my life. I currently work as an ER doc at a couple hospitals in the area. So at the age of 10, my parents joined a Hasidic community in Brooklyn and subsequently enrolled me in Hasidic schools. Unfortunately, that school system didn't provide me, nor any of my other fellow students, with a proper secular education. In case some of the listeners aren't familiar with the Hasidic community in New York, despite the fact that the community is located in one of the most progressive cities in the world, children are intellectually and culturally confined and isolated from the outside world. And they're entirely dependent on what the schools are teaching them. Back then, we had no access to any secular, by secular, I mean non-Judaic or non-religious books, magazines, movies, TV, video games, radio, no secular music, of course, no internet. Even though you're born here in the U.S., it's almost as if you came here as an immigrant because you have all these knowledge gaps. So for elementary school, we had a total of around 90 minutes towards the end of the day that was dedicated to secular topics. So by secular, I mean, you know, reading and writing in English, math, science, those things. Obviously not enough time for all the required subjects. The teachers were typically members of the community who taught these subjects as a side gig. You know, they're typically not licensed. The time period wasn't really taken seriously by any of the students. In high school, there was no secular education at all. We spent 12-ish or so hours per day in school. Subjects consisted of Judaic studies such as Talmud, Bible, religious law, plus daily prayers. So I graduated high school without a typical degree. What made it even worse was that I was unaware of the extent of my educational deficiency. I had educational handicaps that I would only become aware of later on. Also, just to add, these schools are separated by gender, so I'm referring to the boys' school now. The girls' schools are different. Also, the primary language spoken at these schools is Yiddish. You know, many of the Hasidic families also communicate at home primarily in Yiddish. So English is essentially a second language for these kids. Fortunately, that wasn't the case for me. And therefore, I believe that part of the reason I had opportunity that wouldn't be available to most of my classmates. I would say most of them had very poor proficiency in English. As we know, you know, young adults with poor English proficiency are very likely to be limited in opportunity. And with the customary, you know, young age of marriage within the community, followed by the expectation to start having children immediately, you're essentially dooming these young couples to lives of poverty.
Well, so you're feeling that, and even in the article as mentioned, at 21, you lacked marketable skills for employment. I'm just curious, how are you feeling? What was going through your mind? And what was the first thing that you did to, let's call it, change your destiny?
So at the age of 19, I became engaged to a girl from the community. It was an arranged marriage. This is pretty much the norm within the community. I was obviously very young and very much clueless at the time. But suddenly, you know, there was pressure to provide. I had bills to pay. Shortly after marriage, my wife at the time was pregnant. But I found some job. I was working for family, repairing computers and setting up small networks. I took a few entry-level computer hardware and networking courses at the time. Then I did the Microsoft and Cisco exams to become certified as a network engineer. But I was still having trouble, you know, making ends meet in that job and was trying to advance and get a better job. At the age of 21, I was applying for a few jobs. I remember my interviewer was curious about my educational background, being that I left that section of my resume blank. Until that point, I didn't realize that my unusual educational background would pose as a handicap. And so I tried to explain to him that although I lacked a typical high school or college education, I still felt confident that I had the required skill and would be a good candidate for the position. But I didn't get the job, and nor did I get the next. I felt very humiliated by the whole experience, but it also kind of slapped me awake. And underneath it all, I was beginning to feel resentment. It dawned on me that despite attending long hours of school as a teenager, I had no marketable skills to show for. The fact that in my schools, planning for a future career was never a topic of discussion. It bothered me that the system didn't seem to care about preparing us for the future and to be able to join the workforce. They didn't seem to care that young Jewish boys should have the ability to provide for their families in a dignified way. I didn't want to have to resort to government aid to survive. I realized quickly that I have better opportunities within education. So I took the GED and enrolled in college. And I attended college in the evenings and on weekends since I was working during the day. And although, you know, at the time, this systemic educational issue was bothering me, I didn't really feel empowered at the time to do much about it. There was very high value placed within the Hasidic community on respecting parents and teachers to the point of just doing whatever it is they tell you to do. So there isn't much tolerance for questioning the rule. This is more of a personal thing, but I'll share it anyway. For many years, I kept quiet and just did the minimum I had to get by. I was suppressing, you know, my personal desires and preferences and sought to avoid, you know, confrontation. And I rationalized that keeping quiet was me respecting my parents or teachers because I had lots of questions. I had lots of things that didn't sit well with me. But, you know, I was trained to just follow the rule, no questions, respect. But the truth is that at the time, I just lacked the courage to speak my mind. And it was much easier, you know, to show up and just be whoever you're expected to be. Back then, I didn't know how to communicate and express myself in a completely transparent way. I went around just trying to straddle the fence and keep everyone around me content and at times it felt really lonely because I was essentially living a double life. And I failed to see how in that process, I wasn't being true to myself. I actually carried deep shame and guilt because my sense of self wasn't consistent with who I was taught to be. But from personal knowledge and from speaking to friends and family members within the community, I know there are so many others who are struggling with the same issues. Roughly around 2015, I heard about this yeshiva graduate who started this amazing organization called YAFED, Y-A-F-F-E-D, Young Advocates for Fear Education. And they were advocating for better education in these Hasidic schools. It was just speaking to me, and I immediately reached out to get involved with them. I also want to just reiterate one thing, is I want to stress that like it's important not to come from a place of bitterness and grievances. That's not where I'm coming from, you know. Rather, like I feel like empowered, you know, and knowing that I'm not expected to be anyone other than myself. I don't need to fit in anywhere. In fact, like standing out can make you more interesting as a person. Owning your story. I don't carry any negative views against the Hasidic community. I think they're wonderful people. I have family and friends there. We never advocated for removing any Judaic studies or practices. You know, our issue is strictly with the ongoing educational neglect that's just built into the boys' education system.
Your passion for education is palpable. And in fact, even as I was doing some research before having you on the show, I kept coming across your name in so many articles advocating for this issue. So I know how strongly you feel about that. And I wanted to kind of look at this path to becoming a doctor in a little bit more detail. You shared with us how you got your GED and you started doing college and nights and weekends. And you shared with us some of the struggles professionally as you were trying to get a career off the ground. At what point did you think, I want to take my education even further and pursue becoming a doctor?
When I went to college, I was initially taking computer programming courses. 2 years into that, I realized I really didn't like programming. And so I was looking at other courses, and then I stumbled across science, and that came much easier for me. It just felt more natural. And so I just switched to biology. I didn't have much support initially. No one really trusted that I would go through with it. Here I was, you know, married, had two kids at the time. I was actually in business as well at the time. I did have a lot on my plate, and the journey into medicine is long, and I was already behind the curve. My mom never really supported me becoming a doctor. I mean, I believe she always wanted me to be a rabbi or a teacher in a Jewish school. She probably still wants that. She definitely like loves me a lot, and she's never really approved of my journey into medicine.
How old were you when you decided to move into, I guess it would be medical school, right?
I guess I started med school when I was 28. I had the 1 year delay because when I initially took the MCAT is the admissions test for med school. And there's a section on it called the verbal reasoning. There's like science sections and there's a verbal reasoning section. Verbal reasoning really tests your ability to quickly read an article and understand, you know, the very subtle differences in what they're trying to say. Not having any high school background or any background in reading lots of books, you know, I struggled on that section. And, you know, even though I took all these, I did fine on the sciences, but I did embarrassingly low on that section. And so I spent about a year reading The Economist magazine, you know, every week or most of it, just to try and improve my reading comprehension. I was just like very motivated to learn in my 20s. And the more I realized that, you know, I was lacking in education, the more motivated I became and was just focused on doing better. And so I took the MCAT a few times just to get a score that was good enough to get accepted. I was also like very restricted in my application process to school because I was married at the time and my ex-wife didn't want to move from Brooklyn. So I only applied to schools within driving distance.
The Economist, that's an interesting publication because quite often when we're talking about vocabulary and things like that, we often use the contrast of The Economist versus perhaps the local tabloids. Out of curiosity, what was it about The Economist or why did you pick The Economist? I'm just curious to know.
That was one of the publications that people suggested that the articles were up to par with the ones they would give you on the MCAT. It's just like practice. Having those hours and hours reading a lot to be able to like just read a paragraph or read an article within the allotted time and to be able to like extrapolate what they're trying to say and to get the, you know, the answers are all so similar, but there's always one that's better than the other. I still deal with my deficiencies continuously, you know, trying to make up for them. And Toastmasters is just one of those things, you know, where I've always had a fear of public speaking, the most common fear where people are just afraid of what others will think of them. It's just something that you just have to do it to get better at it.
We're going to talk about Toastmasters. In fact, this is a perfect segue into the next section, and that is talking about Toastmasters. And what's interesting is that you joined Toastmasters during the pandemic. I think it was sometime in June of 2020. Now, some might say that as a medical professional, specifically as an emergency doctor, I mean, how is that even fathomable? I mean, how would you be able to find that time?
In emergency medicine, we typically do shift work. Once you're done with your shifts, no one's calling you, you're off. You do a certain number of shifts per month. I did do some extra shifts during early COVID. In my spare time, prior to COVID, I used to do a lot of travel. I used to occupy myself with other things, going out, socializing, and we couldn't do any of that during COVID. So, and I didn't want to go anywhere because I would be surrounded by like sick COVID patients at the hospital, and then I would come home and then just try to stay at home until my next shift. I did end up with lots of downtime.
How did you hear about Toastmasters? And when you did hear about it, what about it made you think, that would be helpful for my next step on my journey here?
I guess I heard about it a couple of years before. I was actually doing some public speaking workshops somewhere in the city to get over my fear of public speaking. I can't remember exactly how I heard about Toastmasters. I mean, I listened to lots of podcasts and somewhere I either heard or read about it. I actually attended a couple random Toastmaster meetings in the city. I just couldn't commit to going weekly because my schedule changes a lot. And, you know, I work different weird hours in emergency medicine. Being able to do it over Zoom was kind of what sold me on committing to it. I do have a little bit more autonomy over my schedule, so I can request to have Tuesday evenings off, and I just made it work.
That's awesome. In fact, it's something that people probably don't know because, of course, what's portrayed on the news are the doctors working 24/7 with no time off, and I know that is, in fact, the case for a number of medical professionals, but perhaps you as an emergency doctor, you need to have that time so that you can that you can rejuvenate. But to stay on the topic of Toastmasters and just referring back also to the article, you mentioned the desire to develop a specialized speaking acumen. You mentioned podcast appearances. So there's your check mark right there because the education is important to you. And in fact, I'm sure Ryan would agree that that is music to our ears.
For sure.
But you also, but you also specifically pointed out panel discussions and press conferences, which all, of course, happen to be pathway speeches. Why these in particular? What were you hoping to accomplish?
I've been on some panels. I feel like it doesn't come natural to me. It's just like other things that I wasn't able to do in the past. And then I kind of spend time working on it. You could get better. I watched so many people within the Toastmasters meeting make so much progress. Some of them are phenomenal speakers, and it's inspiring to me. And one of the major struggles I've had in life is just speaking my mind. You know, I was raised in a culture that taught us to place, like I mentioned, high emphasis on just obeying your parents and teachers and just accepting their interpretation of things. You're just conditioned to comply and never question authority. So it kind of takes away your voice. And it's just highly unusual for people to speak out. And for years, I just didn't have the courage to say what's on my mind, to verbalize it in a way that is concise and clear. Since I've been in Toastmasters, it's really helped me, you know, with confidence and speaking my mind and not worrying so much about whether others agree with me or not. I heard this quote, it's not my job to get everyone to agree with me, but it's my job to be myself and point out things that seem wrong to me.
That's awesome. For those of you listening, if you want to know more about panel discussions and press conferences, of course, you can look at Pathways. But also, we interviewed Kristen Arnold in episode 64 and again last year in episode 197 about moderating panels, both in person and virtually, if you're interested in listening to that.
Well, Shlomo, we certainly appreciate you coming on to share your story with us. And clearly, you are finding your voice. And as I mentioned earlier, even a Google search of your name shows that your voice is out there quite a bit, advocating on the issues that are important to you. At this point, as we wrap up the show, we typically ask our guests how listeners can get in touch with them or maybe follow them on social media.
I do have a Twitter account. If you Google my name, you should be able to find me on Twitter.
Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes as well, your Twitter handle. Great.
Okay. That's super.
Thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it. It was nice talking to both of you.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Shlomo Noskow. We are thrilled to be able to help you check off one of your bucket list items. You have now been a guest on a podcast, so congratulations on that. We wish you further success, further discoveries, embracing your courage and your voice as you get out there and do what you do. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks. This was much more fun than I thought it would be.
Oh, good.
And less stressful.
And also, thank you so much for doing what you do in the ER. You're definitely saving lives, and that's critical, not just during this time, but always.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.